February 8th,
2011. The first item on the agenda today is a public hearing on House Bill 2710. I'll open the public hearing. We are going to have some member testimony first, and Co-Chair Krieger and I have looked this bill over, spent some time with it, and we will be having a work group rework this. There's a lot of, as the audience shows, there's a lot of concerns, and so we will have a group work on that, but we will take testimony today, but we're not going to be working the bill today. Representative Nathanson, please.
Chair and members of the committee, I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from House District 13. I served as co-chair of the Joint Committee on State Justice System Revenue. In 2009, the legislature directed this committee to identify a national justice system funding model and identify best practices, develop a recommended structure to simplify Oregon's judicial department revenue structure, develop recommendations for the distribution and use of the revenues, and develop proposed legislation. We took that on over a number of meetings, over many months, many hours. That's why you have this in front of you today. We've met our obligation assigned by the 2009 legislature. As you know, the judicial branch is indirectly funded in part by revenues received from criminal and civil fines and fees. This bill covers the civil side. My remarks, though, are generally applicable to both bills, the civil and criminal side, so that I won't take up your time when the next bill comes before you. My comments will be general in nature and apply to restructuring our justice system revenue structure. The reason that I'm here is hoping that you will continue to work on these bills, fix or improve the many individual aspects of the bills that you will probably hear testimony on, but not give up on the important work that these bills represent, which is a broad structural reform of what is a very unwieldy, rickety, and unsustainable system. It's expensive, too. It's expensive the way we assess, collect, and distribute the revenues for the courts and some of the related programs. The current system is not actually a uniform or unified system of civil and criminal fines and fees. We have some that are set by statute, and then we have a bunch of add-ons from individual counties. The system is inequitable, it costs too much to administer, and it represents decades of ad hoc individual decisions rather than a unified, organized civil fee structure that represents our current and future needs. One quick example, from the civil side, for a domestic dissolution, there's a base fee of $99 that goes to the general fund, a surcharge of $5 to the stabilization fund, a legal aid fee of $35 to the state bar, a law library fee of $28 to counties, a dispute resolution fee of $3, Department of Human Services Children's Advocate fee of $1 that goes to DHS, and a domestic violence fee of $10 that goes to the Oregon University System. A bunch of different things going to different parties. To keep a functioning court system, it will be important to retain revenue that has already been identified and that's in place. Without some form of this bill and the other bill, that revenue will disappear because they sunset this year. The task force's objective was to keep revenue level. This wasn't like a big money grab. We were just looking to keep the revenue about level, but to simplify, as our assignment was, to simplify the methods of assessing, collecting, and distributing the money. The current system is cumbersome for courts, it's annoying for attorneys, and it's downright mysterious and frustrating for the individual person, if that's the court user or the person who gets assigned a fee. Because of all of the separate fees and local add-ons, someone receiving a violation fine from one county to another probably can't really tell what they're going to have to pay by looking at a ticket. The fine isn't really the fine. And someone considering going to court can't always know ahead of time what it's going to cost them. The attorney can describe some scenarios, but some of the add-ons just simply can't be known ahead of time because they're added in the middle or at the end of the process. On the front end, figuring out what fees to charge is pretty darned complicated, and we heard that it just doesn't happen uniformly in every court due to the complicated charts, the largely manual operations, and a very large workload in a busy, often stressful setting. So the transaction cost of assessing and collecting the fees is very high. An attorney may stand in line for a half hour or more to hand over a check for $10, basically to just get permission to go on to the next part of the process and go to the next window and do the next piece of scheduling. There are a number of concerns expressed about individual parts of these bills. Some of those will boil down to a fundamental consideration: the benefit of standardization versus the flexibility of local options. Do I think it's possible to compromise a little bit? Yes, I certainly do. Do I think it's possible to make some discrete adjustments in these bills? Yes, I think it's possible. In fact, our committee acknowledged that some of those issues came to us rather late in the process, and we lacked time to develop solutions or look into them deeper. I hope that you do. I also hope that you keep the fundamental approach, however, which is making the system simpler, more efficient, more understandable, and transparent for Oregonians. This bill will make court fees more uniform, more predictable, and more efficient to administer. It also gives the legislature the ability to establish the funding level for important services serving the courts. And just as a final thought, this bill is the replacement revenue for House Bill 2287 from 2009. Without passing this bill or some version of it, the budget problem becomes greater instead of helping to solve it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate all the work you've done on that. Representative Krieger.
Representative, this is revenue raising. Do you know what the expected revenue was? Did you ever get a revenue impact?
Yes, we have pages and pages of materials that I hope, instead of relying on me looking for my charts, that you will allow the Legislative Fiscal Office and other staff who are present to provide that information. We did have estimates, and again, we were trying to keep the revenue about level. It would just be collected in a different way.
And that is part of the governor's budget? Probably.
I can't answer that other than yes, likely, because it's the same revenue level.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Representative. So that was interesting. You gave us an example when somebody is getting divorced. And so one of the revenue streams would be to... what was the word when people are trying to compromise or reach a solution? So using that as an example, so how would that program continue to get funds that they would have gotten from the dissolution of the marriage?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the mechanism would be through statute. All the programs that are currently funded through these individual assessments or fees would continue to be funded, and they would be named in statute.
Follow-up? Funded at the same rate that they aren't, say, in this last biennium or over a period of years. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, roughly, there you will hear testimony that some estimates may be a little off depending if someone was looking at 2009 or 10 or 8 or what was the historical level. And again, some of those are details that can continue to be worked on, but the intent is that the programs should be funded relatively the way they are. Not the way as the mechanism, but that we wanted to retain the programs.
Thank you. Representative Thank you. Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to take a second and thank Representative Nathanson for her work on this. I was on this committee for what felt like most of the past 20 years, and it was a long process, and this is a massively complicated process. And the work of the interim committee was always envisioned as one step in a multi-step process, and here we are beginning step two. But I want it to be said that you and your senator counterpart, Senator Berger, did great work in trying to wrestle with this beast and bring us a product that will need some adjustments here and there, but I think in its broad outlines is really on target. So thanks very much.
Wilson, Representative Wilson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nathanson, how are you?
What's the deal here?
I mean, okay. Okay, so the four programs that exist right now, the law library, the child custody domestic relations piece, the dispute resolution services, and then, let's see, the legal aid services. Okay, the county has control of those right now. My question is, because you're creating the court fees account, they're going to now, the dollars will be going to them, they're going to oversee the disbursement of those dollars to these four programs. Is that the way I understand it?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the mechanism is not exactly like that, and we even had discussions about, well, technically the money goes through the Department of Administrative Services, or technically does the money get sent to some other entity, and for each of these bills, I think it would be best if staff explain to you the legal and technical mechanism of the money goes from this fund through this agency to this agency.
A follow-up. Under Section 1, Sub B, you have $7.4 million going to the Association of Oregon Counties, but I don't see a formula how that goes out. Is that something that's going to be developed through rulemaking then, or left up to the counties?
Mr. Chair and Representative, if that's the one that refers to law libraries, I know that you are likely to hear testimony that perhaps that isn't even the right mechanism, that perhaps the money should flow to some other entity and not AOC for the appropriate distribution. So again, that's the sort of detail that I think you are well positioned to hear alternate ideas for the appropriate mechanism.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Senator Bonamici, please.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger and committee members. I'm Suzanne Bonamici. I represent Senate District 17 in the Oregon Senate, and I, along with Representative Garrett, for the past 20 years, have been a member of the Joint Interim Committee on Justice Systems Revenue. Now, all kidding aside, it was a fascinating process to go through. We spent a lot of time together over the interim, volumes of paper and hours of discussion. I want to start by thanking the co-chairs of the committee, Representative Nathanson and Senator Verger, and also the professional staff. I know legislative fiscal, legislative revenue, and legislative council spent a lot of time grappling with a really complex issue, and really a lot of effort went into this bill. And it does something really important that Representative Nathanson just talked about. It really simplifies, consolidates, and brings consistency to what's a very convoluted fee structure. Some of the stories we heard about the inefficiencies were really mind-boggling and definitely need to get remedied. Throughout this process, I expressed some concerns about a particular effect of the bill, and that's the effect on Oregon Legal Services and provision of legal aid to needy Oregonians. And Legal Services operates about a dozen offices currently throughout Oregon, from Albany to Bend, Pendleton, Newport, Oregon City, Salem. and they have offices across the state. And since 1997, they've been operating with dedicated fees. And I'll tell you just a little bit of history because it's important to understand how this came about. Then-Senator Neil Bryant, and it could have happened in this very room, who was serving in the Oregon Senate, helped negotiate the dedicated fee structure with oversight by the Oregon State Bar. And that process has been working well to fund legal services. We heard about when legal services are funded, and legal services is a national organization, but when states have legal services funding go through a general fund, what happens is that the process becomes very politicized. And depending on the whims of the committee members, there may be restrictions on what type of work they can do, and the funding fluctuates too much for consistency of services to needy Oregonians. So this fee structure was established with then-Senator Neil Bryant in oversight by the Oregon State Bar, and it's been working well. It only provides currently about 36% of the funding for legal services, the dedicated fees. The rest of it, I'm sure people here from Legal Aid will help you understand where the rest of the funding comes from, but it's a very important portion of the funding. And what happens with House Bill 2710 through this process is that it does remedy the situation of having to go through the general fund by sending the money into the court fees account. However, it was intended to reflect a historical level of funding for legal aid, and it does not do that. And my concern, and I'm here to express the concern about this particular issue, but to say that most of the bill does important work, and we definitely need to do something about this fee structure, but right now, the way it's structured for legal aid will necessitate cuts and elimination or elimination of offices, legal aid offices around the state, which is particularly a problem in these times because legal services provides help to only low-income Oregonians who are in dire situations, for example, domestic violence, landlord-tenant, problems where the people could not get help otherwise. They have to qualify for legal services, and currently in Oregon, only about 20% of the people who are eligible can get help, and that's under the current system. So to the extent that 2710, House Bill 2710, would cause further cuts, that is why I'm here to say that I'm very concerned about that. In difficult economic times, there's an increase in need for civil legal services for people they won't be able to afford to go get help elsewhere. So that's why I'm here to express my concern. I know people are here from Legal Aid to talk about that. I just urge you to keep that portion of concern in mind as you look at this bill, what the impact would be on low-income Oregonians who need help across the state. So again, thank you to the co-chairs of the Joint Interim Committee and to the staff. This is an important bill, but I did want to raise that concern to you to keep in mind. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you so much. Thank you for appearing today, Senator. Senator, I guess as I'm hearing you, wanting to protect legal aid, and I understand that, certainly support that, but wouldn't my guess is, I certainly didn't sit in those 20 years of hearings and dealings with this, and I know what that feels like, but wouldn't each of those groups that has this dedicated fund, aren't they each going to be coming to us today or later to say, protect this fund because it's very important?
Co-Chair Krieger, Co-Chair Barker, and Representative Tomei, that very well may be, and that did happen in the committee. I picked legal aid. I'm talking about legal aid as an example because, first of all, it's an established statewide program, but it does have the oversight through the Oregon State Bar. You may hear those arguments from the other entities that are affected, and they may be compelling. I wanted to focus on legal services today just because of the scope of the problem. It's a little bigger scope of an issue than the others.
I can appreciate that. If I can have a further question, thank you. So I understand your concern about it being politicized, and I guess that's one of the concerns I have about all of these that go into, say, the general fund. Then each legislature can decide how they're going to be spending that general fund, where now at least those funds are protected. So much will go for domestic violence, so much for legal aid, et cetera. So it's not so politicized. So wouldn't it become more politicized if it were in a place in the general fund?
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, and Representative Tomei, it would be, and that's why it's not structured that way in the bill.
Okay.
It's structured to go into a court fees account, a portion of the funding, but then the bill also sets a certain limit for legal services, and that limit was to be based on historic level of funding, but it does not reflect a historic level of funding for reasons that representatives from legal aid will explain.
Thank you so much. Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonamici, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Representative
Walsh. This isn't the Mental Health Caucus. I thought I'd point that out to you. So.
Appreciate that.
Tomorrow, noon, room 350
Good
for all
problem.
Of you. Okay. I got several questions, but I think I'll just ask you one. And then maybe catch up with you a little later on some of these others right now. The civil action filing fee for the circuit courts that's being recommended through the proposed is going to be anywhere from $100 up to $225 range, depending on what the action is. I'm curious, in your work group, did you have any discussion about the possibility of impact that might have on the justice courts and municipal courts for their volume of workload, mainly because what I'm thinking is their filing fee isn't going to increase from what I read of the bill, but the state courts is. So, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, where would I rather go if I'm only going to pay $30, you know, in a justice court for filing fee on issue for civil action rather than going to the state court?
Co-Chair Parker, Co-Chair Krieger, and Representative Olson, we did discuss all of those issues and access to justice issues. And I'm sorry, I didn't bring all of my files. I wasn't prepared to answer specific questions about different components of the bill. But we had extensive discussions about the impact to access to justice.
Thank you. I'll catch up to you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Mark Comstock, Sandra Huntsberger, and Martha Walters, please.
Yes, is that.
Ms. Walters, would you?
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, thank you. I'm Martha Walters. I'm an Associate Justice on the Oregon Supreme Court, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Judicial Department. And I, too, want to extend my thanks to the Interim Committee for the hard work that they've done on this important matter. The top priority, as I'm sure you know, of our Chief Justice, Paul DeMunis, and the Oregon Judicial Department as well, is to maintain an open and accessible court system for Oregonians. And that means having your state courts open and accessible and able to process all types of cases according to Oregon statute and according to the Oregon Constitution, which means that we must administer justice completely and without delay. And to that end, the Judicial Department worked with the 75th Legislative Assembly to develop an interim fee structure under House Bill 2287. And that bill raised additional revenue to maintain that open and accessible justice system. We have spent literally hundreds of hours of judge and staff time working with the Joint Interim Committee to meet the statutory charge that Representative Nathanson just talked to you about, and that basically, as we understood it, was to replace that same set of funding for the civil side. And I'm only going to be talking to you today about the civil filing fee structure. We were asked to try to find a more simplified way of producing that same revenue stream. And I participated in the Oregon State Bar Court Task Force, and I chaired a Judicial Department work group to try to assist your interim committee to try to figure out if there was a way that we could produce those same revenues and still make a more simplified system for Oregonians. Now, many of the provisions in House Bill 2710 actually reflect discrete policy choices that are available to you as legislators. And I know that you heard from Justice Landau and Chief Judge Brewer last week, and of course the Oregon Judicial Branch believes that those policy choices are within your province, and we won't be taking specific positions on the policy choices, difficult policy choices that you will have. But we are here to assist you in describing the impact of those choices on our judicial branch and the administrative of justice. We believe that House Bill 2710 promotes several goals that the Oregon Judicial Department supports. One, it helps. It doesn't go all the way, but it helps to maintain access to Oregon state courts by providing funds that can be used to support court operations and related services. And as I said, the funds generated by this bill are intended only to replace the funds generated by House Bill 2287. That's obviously not the entire court budget. It's just the portion that was represented by the 2287 funds. Number two, it simplifies the imposition and collection of civil filing fees, and that helps the OJD to administer its operations more efficiently and effectively. It makes the fee structure easier to understand for the court and litigants. It helps our staff to be able to use its time on other matters, spend less time calculating filing fees, and it helps litigants to know what fees they're supposed to bring into court. We, as a matter of statute, our courts cannot accept filings without payment of the appropriate fees. So this is an important first step in getting into court. And finally, the bill provides statutory funding, and you've asked some questions about that statutory funding. It provides statutory funding for non-court services that the OJD feels are very important to directly promote access to justice. Those include the legal aid funds and the services for mediation and conciliation services. The legislature should adequately fund those services because, number one, they enable our courts to operate efficiently and effectively. We can't keep our courts open when we don't have this type of assistance. We can't do it as well and as effectively and as efficiently as we want to do. And it also helps to ensure that all Oregonians have effective access to justice in Oregon. You'll know, and when you look at the bill, it's probably not the most important provision that you'll think of right away, but it's got a July 1 effective date right now, and I know you're talking about having a work group. The Oregon Judicial Department is going to need about 3 to 4 months to make the necessary programming changes to implement this bill once it's finalized. So you have to take that effective date into consideration depending upon what other action needs to be go into this bill before it becomes finalized. So in conclusion, I'd just like to tell you that House Bill 2710 is the product of significant efforts by the legislature, by the court, and by those who use the courts to maintain an open and accessible judicial system and to simplify the civil filing fee structure.
Thank you, and we recognize the effective date and that issue with creating something additional, but oftentimes in my time here, sometimes towards the end of the session, we'll get in a hurry, and then things have to be redone a couple of times
yes.
to get them right, so we're going to
yes.
try and get a good product before we...
And Co-Chair Barker, I did want to say that we're more than happy, and we really welcome the opportunity to continue to work with your committee in any further work that you think needs to be done in this bill. Co-Chair Krieger, thank you.
Well, thank you, Judge. I'm sure we'll do that. Okay. Either, go ahead, please.
Co-Chair Barker and Krieger and members of the committee. My name is Sandra Hansberger, and I'm the Executive Director of the Lawyers Campaign for Equal Justice. The Campaign for Equal Justice was started 20 years ago. We're a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to help provide support to Oregon legal aid programs. I came prepared with a quick PowerPoint just to give you some basics about Oregon legal aid programs. The first is a map, which shows the legal aid offices in Oregon. There are actually offices in 19 communities around the state. Legal aid programs serve all 36 communities. It might be helpful to point out that some offices for legal aid were closed in the 1990s due to budget cuts, and those were on the North Coast, also in the Columbia Gorge and Klamath Falls. The only of those three offices that has been reopened is the Klamath Falls office, which reopened in 2007. A problem with that is that clients and lawyers have to travel a long distance in some communities in order to get assistance. About the clients, there are about 800,000 low-income Oregonians who are eligible for legal aid programs, and I think you heard Senator Bonamici say that with current funding, we're meeting less than 20% of the civil legal needs of the poor. Despite that, last year, legal aid served 20,000 clients throughout the state. Many more were helped with self-help materials, including websites and pro bono assistance. Over almost a half a million Oregonians accessed OregonLawHelp.org, which is legal aid's website that provides information for clients in such basic issues as domestic violence, housing, Social Security, unemployment. The types of cases that legal aid handles, the single largest case type area is family law, and that's 43% of the cases. The vast majority of those cases are focused on domestic violence. The second largest area is in housing, and that is oftentimes assisting individuals who are tenants and their homes or residences are being foreclosed upon, and also working to help individuals access a low-income and subsidized housing. Other areas include income maintenance. That's 11% of the cases. Those are often unemployment compensation, Social Security, and the like. I wanted to talk to you just briefly about legal aid's work with domestic violence, since it is the largest type of cases that Oregon legal aid programs handle. Legal aid last year provided direct services to 8,000 victims of domestic violence. As noted, tens of thousands more were helped with pro se help, pro bono assistance, including programs such as the Domestic Violence Project, which those projects train private lawyers to assist in representing low-income individuals in domestic violence cases. So we're trying to take advantage of the resources we have in the private lawyer community. Legal aid lawyers work very closely with police and with district attorneys and also on such things as county family violence coordinating councils. In my written testimony, there's a quote from a district attorney a deputy DA in Washington County, who basically stated that when a domestic violence victim goes into a civil hearing, we can't do anything to help them, and I'm really glad legal aid is there to help. So just very briefly, what does legal aid do to help victims of domestic violence? Essentially, we are working to obtain restraining orders and assist clients in restraining order hearings, and then in the follow-up divorce, custody, child support, and also victims of domestic violence are frequently individuals who face problems with homelessness and unemployment. Just briefly, studies show that the presence of a legal aid office in a community reduces the incidence of domestic violence. Finally, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the funding sources for legal aid. As you heard Senator Bonamici state, the filing fee makes up about 36% of legal aid's funding. We actually are a private state and federal partnership, and the National Legal Services Corporation provides some funding. Additional funding is provided from the Campaign for Equal Justice, the Oregon Law Foundation, which is interest on lawyer trust. We have concerns that House Bill 2710, particularly Section 1, Subsection 2, as it relates to funding for legal aid, uses an inaccurate baseline and for determining the $11.1 million. We also have concerns that the structure will further harm legal aid. I'm going to, Mark Comstock is here to talk about more of the specifics of the financial impact. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger and members of the House Judiciary Committee. My name is Mark Comstock. I'm an attorney practicing law here in Salem. I sit before you today as a member of the Board of Directors of the Oregon Law Center and Legal Aid Services of Oregon to speak on behalf of legal aid. Legal aid supports the adequate funding for the courts and those programs associated with the courts, including legal aid. You'll note that on the sign-in sheet, I checked in support. Well, it is in support with some substantial adjustments that I hope to talk about here. Legal aid programs understand the need to maintain the revenue generated by HB 2287 and its sunset and reduce the problem caused by many fees and surcharges that were created by 2287. I'm not going to repeat what Ms. Hansberger has said here, but let me just address what legal aid is, how it's funded. Legal aid is funded by a combination of state, federal and private funds. Since 1977, the dedicated filing fee has been a stable source of funding for legal aid that supported its efforts to seek additional funding from various foundations. As HB 2710 is written, there is a substantial negative impact that is not, I would say, does not carry forth what the interim committee intended to do. And that is legal aid will be losing about $1 million in general fund appropriations in the 11 to 13 time period due to budget shortfall. Legal aid will lose approximately $1 million from Oregon Law Foundation funding because interest on lawyer trust accounts is substantially reduced. The issue is in Section 1 of HB 2710. In the negative impact by reducing filing fee funding, by an estimate is $779,000 in 11 to 13, and by just a little bit over $1 million in 13 to 15. This means that the funding hit to legal aid funds is approaching $3 million, about $2.8 million. This will threaten the viability of the programs and especially maintaining these offices that have been recently opened in Klamath Falls and being able to provide the service. Now, Senator Bonamici testified about the oversight a bit. Legal aid is, that's in the general fund funding for legal aid is subject to oversight, and it was specifically set up that way because there is oversight with the Oregon State Bar and how these funds are apportioned. In addition to my role as a volunteer board member of Legal Aid, I've done volunteer work with the Oregon State Bar for many decades, including adequate funding for the courts. In many years, including 2003 to 2007, there did not appear to be enough money to address all of the documented need. Nonetheless, the legislature took appropriate steps in light of the circumstances to keep the basic structures of justice in place. We support the committee's efforts to secure adequate funding for the courts and other entities that are closely associated with the courts, like Legal Aid. We think it can be done with some substantial tweaks to the bill, especially in Section 1. Now, you also will note that I handed out a written testimony on behalf of another member of the Board of Directors of Legal Aid. And that is written testimony of former Representative Lane Shetterly, who also sits on both boards. And former Representative Shetterly couldn't be here today, but he does go extensively into the history and how previous legislatures have chosen to assist Legal Aid in the funding and the history. I know he echoes my concern with Section 1 of this bill and how the bill as it is written does not fulfill what the interim committee intended to do, especially as to Legal Aid. And I won't repeat former Representative Shetterly's testimony. You have it before you and some supporting information. Be pleased to answer questions to the extent I can.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you, committee.
Thank you.
Mark Weiner, Jonathan Manton, and Nan Heim, please. Just go ahead in any order. Just identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Hi, my name is Merle Weiner, and I'm a professor of law at the University of Oregon School of Law. And I'm here testifying today in my personal capacity to provide some information to you about the Domestic Violence Clinic Legal Education Account and the Stop Violence Against Women Clinic Project, a beneficiary of that account. The account currently receives dedicated filing fee money and is specifically mentioned in House Bill 2710 as an entity to continue to receive funds in the future. And my full testimony was emailed to each of you this morning. I don't have a copy of it here, but it should be in your email accounts when you have a chance to look at that. The bottom line is that it's extremely important that the account be assured of the same level of funding that it has received historically. Otherwise, I think a project that is critical to victims of domestic violence, stalking, and sexual assault throughout the state will be greatly harmed. And I just want to give a little bit of history. The filing fee that currently funds the account was created by the legislature in 2007. 23 representatives and 5 senators, both Democrats and Republicans, sponsored the legislation, including 5 members of this committee. And I want to thank you again, Chairs Krieger and Barker, and Representatives Nolan Olson and Representative Tomei. It's been a very important piece of legislation for the Domestic Violence Clinic. The bill did pass with overwhelming bipartisan support. The vote was 52-3 in the House and 28-1 in the Senate. The fee is a one-time $10 charge on petitioners and respondents in marital dissolution actions. The fees then are administered by the Oregon university system and may only be used for funding clinical legal education programs at accredited institutions of higher education that provide civil legal services to domestic violence victims, stalking victims, or sexual assault victims. Each program that seeks funding must document that it meets the criteria the legislature set out in the statute and has to file a report annually showing that it is doing the work it was intended to do. review. The fee was created for clinics like that at the University of Oregon, so let me just tell you a little bit about it. The clinic at the University of Oregon educates future lawyers so they will competently and willingly represent these victims. And we do this by having law students, under the supervision of an attorney, provide representation to low-income victims in civil cases where the victims would otherwise lack legal representation. And we ensure the representation is holistic by pairing the attorney, the student attorney, with an advocate from either women's space or sexual assault support services who can provide the client with the emotional and other support necessary for that client to achieve safety.
I am proud to say that Fleming has saved many lives, stopped senseless violence, and protected children in clients' homes from the trauma associated with domestic violence. In essence, most of the work in Lane County on domestic violence for low-income victims is done by our clinic. Although we're located in Lane County, domestic violence victims often flee for safety, and we've served victims from all over the state, including Douglas, Coos, Multnomah, Lynn, Benton, and Marion counties. But most importantly, it has also contributed to the well-being of the state by educating future lawyers so they can provide competent legal services to these victims all over the state. Our students come from all over the state. They go back and they practice all over the state. And in 2007, when the bill was before the legislature, we had alums testifying from Corvallis, Portland, Hood River, Medford, Beaverton, Bend, and other communities in favor of the bill. I should mention many of our graduates are doing the legal aid work, and unfortunately the legal aid regulations preclude them from speaking out in favor of legislation or particular programs, but I can tell you from just private conversations that they all feel that the dedicated filing fee was very important to both their education and their ability to go into legal aid and do that very important work. Now, I'll just say a moment or two more. The account, I want to say, I think, by funding this program is really lowering the occurrence of domestic violence throughout the state, because it is empirically demonstrated that providing legal services does lower the rate of domestic violence in a particular community. And lowering the rate is imperative because we know, as Oregonians, domestic violence affects all of us, not to mention the $50 million each year in very real costs from it. Now, the filing fee money has been very important to stabilizing our program. I kind of outlined that in the letter to you. We were totally grant dependent before. We had lost our most important grant for 1 year, and it caused total pandemonium. We lost staff. We couldn't provide needed services, and we didn't have students signing up for the clinic because students need to know that their program is going to be there in order to sign up for it. Now, we still do fundraising. We still apply for grants, but we know we have the floor there that lets us provide services and tell our students that the program will be there. So let me just conclude by saying that I hope that whatever you do with filing fees, you just hold the domestic violence clinic legal aid education account harmless. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Representative Torbay.
Thank you. So I guess I have a question. I certainly voted and supported the issue that you're speaking of, but I'm still confused. Are you supporting this bill?
Well, at this point, to be honest, we're neutral on the bill. I think that we have some concerns. For example, there's no provision for inflation, and so the amount is static. And so there's concerns like that that we have, but I think as long as we are assured our historic level of funding, we would be fine with it.
Thank you. Could I just ask a question of the chairs? So I'm feeling a little bit confused about where we are here. We got a brief overview of the bill, and now we're hearing from people who have dedicated funds coming from this pool of money. So is that, we're not going to hear anything more about why this bill is and any more about the background?
We will. We're going to have a work. We explained this before you got here. That's okay. We're having a work group. We're going to have an additional work group.
That will be supporting this now to this committee.
Yes.
So now we're hearing testimony about funds should be preserved. Yeah,
this is the public hearing on the bill, but we're going to have a work group do additional work, which I announced at the first, but the people are here to testify today. So that's right. Representative Hicks.
Thank you. Hi, Professor. I just want to chime in that Oregon is often on the cutting edge nationally, even internationally, of a lot of things, usually good things for the better, sometimes not necessarily, but this clinic, Professor Weiner's clinic, DV Clinic, is truly a shining example of a way in which Oregon is leading the effort against domestic violence, and I think that untold numbers of victims can owe serious, substantial, and much impossible to overstate changes in their lives to this clinic, to the graduates of this clinic. And if anyone wants, in my opinion, to see an exceptional use of public dollars leveraged for maximum good, I would urge them to talk to Professor Weiner, because this is really what I think this sort of money should be doing.
Thank you very much.
Co-Chairs Barker and Krieger, my name is Jonathan Manton, members of the committee. I don't have a whole lot to add. I'm just here today to offer myself as a resource as this process continues. I was a legislative assistant for Senator Prezonsky when the bill passed that Professor Weiner was referring to with regard to this domestic violence clinical legal education account. I'm trying to remember, I think actually every single member of this committee that was serving in 2007 when it passed ultimately signed on as a co-sponsor. So that's just, I'm just here as a resource. If you have additional questions as this happens, I'm going to be in the building all the time. I'm happy to try to provide more details or any objective, data that you may need as the process continues.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Hyatt, please.
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, and members of the committee, I'm Nan Heim, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Library Association, and we're generally supportive of this bill. The section that I want to address today is Section 105 on page 42, and that is the section that directs the Association of Oregon Counties to run law library service, to coordinate it throughout the state. And our suggestion today is based on a report that the Oregon State Library commissioned last year, a study of law library services across the state. And I briefly considered emailing it to all of you. It's 60 pages. I'm sure you would have been pleased. I will send, perhaps when the work group gets going, I will email you the 2-page executive summary. It's a really good report, and we strongly endorse it. It does recommend that based on this survey and review of services throughout the state, that there should be a central coordinating agency. This bill says the Association of Oregon Counties. The report suggests either an intergovernmental agreement among the counties or the state law librarian, and those are alternatives that we would prefer. And I do want to emphasize that we strongly support the basic purpose of law libraries. They serve a wide variety of users, and I've been amazed meeting with them and talking with them, the kinds of questions and research that they do for people, for attorneys, for judges, for litigants, et cetera. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Jerry Guidos and Mr. Walters, if you.
I think that was Justice Walters up here tonight.
Co-Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger, thank you for letting the State Bar be represented here today, too. I want to thank you, all members of the committee, for the service that you are putting in at this really difficult economic time. And I know that having all these people come before you and asking for your thoughts and your energy, your passion, is something that we all respect. So I appreciate that, and I know the State Bar appreciates that.
Thank you.
I was able to be a chair of the task force that dealt with this issue, and it was the State Bar's task force, so that the practitioners would have some opportunity to be present. And I want to thank the legislative staff, both in the fiscal and in the drafting staff. They were excellent help, and I want to thank you for allowing them to participate both in our committee and allowing us to
kind of mine their intense talent and experience, so thank you for that. We were heavily involved in the process, had about 12 meetings. Our goal was to ensure that a fairly complex process, which was described really well by Representative Nathanson, could be simplified and made easier both for the practitioners and the public. So the bill that's before you is consistent with the work product of the Oregon Judicial Department Fees Work Group and the recommendations of that report. The Oregon State Bar supports the bill's basic approach, policy, and concept. The fee schedule may need to be modified to address some concerns of various interests, including collectors and landlords who file many cases, sometimes of small dollar value, and it may need to be adjusted in other ways. But the frustration, both for the public and for practitioners, with the current bill is really not satisfactory, so it's important that something be done. The bar recognizes, and I know the citizens of the state recognize, that the judicial department is a core function of government that should be supported by the general fund. But in these tough economic times, those who need the court system to resolve their disputes need to pay more than we may want them to otherwise pay. We remain concerned that the high fees may well bar courthouse doors to all but the most affluent among us. But we know that there's a mechanism to continue to review these fees, so we encourage that, even though it may not have to be a legislative committee. We've heard enough about legal aid. I just want to emphasize that the bar supports legal aid and the bar supports the functions that are in that group that you've heard from. In the legal aid issue, we believe it was accurately stated by those folks representing the Campaign for Equal Justice and Legal Aid. And maintaining that current system is extremely important to maintaining a civil society, so we appreciate that. In sum, I just want to say thank you again for being here. Thank you for the work you're doing. This bill is important, and I know the bar is willing to continue to participate in any kind of legislative committee that's going forward. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Jim Straub, Wynn Baldwin, and Rick Thomas, please. And please go in any order you wish. Just identify yourself for the record.
Co-chairs and member of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Jim Straub, and I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Rental Housing Association. We're one of the largest landlord trade groups in the state of Oregon. In fact, the Oregon Rental Housing Association represents rental property owners in the majority of Oregon counties, with over 3,500 landlord members and 65,000 rental units statewide. Additionally, I've been a property manager for the majority of my life, over 20 years now, in Lane County. I've been practicing professionally. House Bill 2710 increases the current $67 total filing fees paid by the plaintiff to $100. That's a 50% increase in total fees. Increasing cost to landlords equates to increases in rent, with a growing pressure for affordable housing due to the economy. This is neither a good time to increase fees, nor is 50% increase reasonable. Therefore, we oppose House Bill 2710 as drafted. We recognize that landlords file many lawsuits, either for possession or for small claims. Generated by these cases play a significant role in funding the courts. With that said, the task force that created this bill did not solicit participation or input from the people who pay these fees. Although others were invited to the table to discuss the new fees, landlords were not. And we would ask the committee now to include landlords at the table to discuss the fee increase proposed in House Bill 2710. Landlords and tenants recognize the importance of the court system and support funding it. However, access to justice should not be cost prohibitive or unreasonable. A 50% increase in cost is certainly unreasonable and may make the court less accessible to the small business landlord who is just trying to reclaim property from a tenant who has not paid the rent. We would respectfully ask the House Judiciary Committee to consider amending the court fees to reflect a reasonable approach which funds the courts while not hurting the small business in this tough economy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Gwen Baldwin. Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Parker and Krieger and members of the committee. I represent here today a Metro Multifamily Housing Association, which, despite the name, actually does represent 150,000 units across Oregon in most communities. And our members provide housing, homes, to thousands of folks, or people with thousands of units of property, to those who are mom and pops that have one duplex and they live on the other side. So it's a wide range of that make up the landlord community. As an association, we are committed to quality rental housing and to providing training, education, and best practices and understanding of the laws that affect the landlord community. As drafted, the association cannot support this bill. We do recognize the critical importance that filing fees play in paying for not only the courts but for associated services. At the same time, FED court is the only avenue by which a landlord can reclaim their dwelling unit if rent is not paid or through small claims. And so access to that justice really cannot be unreasonable. And as Jim mentioned, what we're facing is a 50% increase from $67 in total fees to $100. And that actually presumes, the 67 presumes going to trial. Frequently, our situations don't go to trial. You know, the judge says, go out in the hallway and sort this out, and we do. And so it presumes a prepayment of a service that we may never actually tap. And in doing so, that increased the cost to everybody within the housing, including the tenants who are served and have their homes with us. I would really support, and we would be very eager to participate in a work group that would help further this conversation. As Jim mentioned, regrettably were not included in that conversation earlier and would very much like to be. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Barker and Krieger members of the committee. My name is Rick Thomas with the Associated Builders and Contractors and Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon. Here this afternoon testifying in support of Section 15 of the bill, which addresses some issues that have come out of lien filing fees, moves it to a tiered structure based on the size of the lien. During the last session of the legislature, some changes were done that created some situations where lien fees changed dramatically, especially on situations where you had multiple claimants involved in the lien. Some specific examples had come up where a $25,000 lien claim where you had 18 claimants that were involved in it had a fee of $3,546 to file that lien. Previously, that was about $197 filing fee on it. And so this changes the structure so that smaller liens are treated differently because, again, in situations where you may have a $2 million lien, if there's fewer claimants, the fee was much, much smaller. So as a result, we're very, very much in favor of what's in Section 15.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question to either Ms. Baldwin or, I'm sorry, the gentleman who spoke before.
Jim Straub.
You mentioned that the current fee is $67. How long has that fee been in place?
The last increase was 2005 to the simple administrative filing fee, which, as you know, is one of the several fees that's involved in this.
Thank you. Part of the point I'm raising is a 50% increase that happens once a decade is different than a 50% increase that happens every 2 years. And I know it stings just as much, but part of the context is how frequently these fees are revisited. Thanks.
No question that timing it needs to be considered in this. It is, however, at one time quite a significant increase.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, panel. Sandy Four, is that right? Oh, favor, maybe? Sorry.
Hi, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm just here in...
Could you identify yourself?
Sorry. My name is Sandy Faber. I'm a second-year associate at the Hands at Kent & Hook, which is a divorce firm in Portland, Oregon. I'm here in support of Professor Weiner's testimony to tell you that the clinic does make young lawyers confident and willing to represent domestic violence victims, because I'm a young lawyer, I went through the program, and I'm competent and willing to represent domestic violence victims. As a young attorney, you tend to be afraid of the messy cases. You want to take the cases that are a house and a dog and everyone's getting along. And the experienced attorneys are willing to take any case, but their fees are very high. It's really important that we have people out there who are willing to take these cases, who aren't afraid of them, and who are still affordable, and that's what the clinic does, is it trains people like me. Moving into my practice, I'm starting to focus on domestic violence issues, and that's because of my experience in the clinic. That's because somebody taught me about the cycle of violence, about how to help a domestic violence survivor, even though it was very difficult, and made me not afraid of it. I had that mentorship. I also want to testify to the fact that it is really important that the clinic has some sort of stable funding, because law students will not take the clinic if they can't predict their schedules. And like me, a lot of law students aren't going to know that this is what they're going to be good at and this is what they want to do. They're going to see that they can't be certain it's going to be there next year, and they won't take it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your work on doing that kind of work. And also remember, when you are an old lawyer, you can still charge a little less if you would like. Okay, Paul Snyder, Alex. Kyler and Jacqueline Jerkins, please. Go ahead, kick off any way you want.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. With respect to House Bill 2010, in its current form, we respectfully oppose the measure. And I'd like to identify a few of the reasons why. But first, I'd like to applaud the committee for its work, the interim committee, and the goals that it set forth to accomplish. Uniformity is a good thing, and accountability is a good thing. Legislative oversight is a good thing. One of the problems, though, that we have with respect to this bill, and I would like to mention now that Representative Olson actually raised it.
If it were further,
we respectfully suggest that something be done about justice court fees in small claims and other cases where they're essentially very disparate as the bill is drafted. And another issue, though, has to do with the basics behind, I believe, the philosophy of the measure. Right now, there are two programs that are specific to counties that we actually administer that would be changed possibly dramatically, possibly not, by the way the measure unfolds, depending upon, in part, what the funding level is, but also in part on how the whole thing is structured. Justice Walters has already testified about the importance of mediation and conciliation services. The way those services are structured right now, they are provided through a filing fee that's set by the county governing body in consultation with the presiding circuit court judge. The circuit court judge advises the county governing body on what level of services are appropriate for that county, and the county sets the fee accordingly. Something similar occurs with respect to law libraries. It would require, I believe, county local bar association to say it wants a law library. The county governing body establishes the law library and then sets the fee. All of these things have a nexus between the fee that's charged and the service that's provided. The fee that's charged for conciliation and mediation services has a direct relationship both on the workload of the circuit court and on the ability of the circuit court to move the cases forward in an expeditious kind of way. With respect to the law libraries, I've heard from more than one source. For example, in domestic relations cases, at least one of the parties is self-represented in 80% of the time. Well, in situations like that, those individuals need whatever resources they can get. It's often the case that they're self-represented because they can't afford an attorney. And so those services, those research services, are available to them in order to move their cases along and understand what's going on in their life. This would be replaced by a standard filing fee. Yes, it's uniform, but the uniformity comes at the expense of local control. It comes at the expense of the ability of the local governing body to establish fees that fit the circumstances of their community and that are sensitive both to the needs of the community and the ability of the community to pay the fees. There is another provision I think that Nan Heim has alluded to in the bill. We understand why we were added as an organization to receive, distribute county law library funding, and the standards and the guidelines fit within, understandably, the idea of providing for some measure of control. But we respectfully suggest that for a voluntary association that relies heavily on the goodwill of its members and on the dues they pay, we're really not very well suited to this responsibility. If we are to establish real guidelines and apply those guidelines to the law libraries across the state operated by our member counties, there will be winners and losers. And it really just doesn't fit for a voluntary organization to take on a role such as that. Now, Ms. Heim has indicated there are other possible folks who might be able to do this responsibility. We'd also suggest that even if you don't want to identify a particular mechanism for establishing guidelines on an ongoing basis, it wouldn't be all that hard to establish some formula for distribution that's ministerial, doesn't require a whole lot of discretion. You just apply it based upon what the formula would indicate, such as population, or the number of cases that are filed in a particular circuit court, or establishing a base funding mechanism for rural counties so that they're sure that they have some ability to get something done with the revenues that they get. There are a number of formulas in place right now that provide that kind of a mechanism, and it wouldn't be that hard to develop something like that. But we would respectfully request that AOC be deleted as the receptacle for these funds and the distribution.
Representative Garrett.
Just a brief comment, Mr. Chair. When this came up in the interim committee, I would say everybody basically probably agrees with Paul on this. I think that it was just through inertia that this provision was left in. There's really no reason why AOC should be in this role. I can't speak to why they were put in there originally, but I think the fact that it remains in the bill does not reflect a decision by the committee that's appropriate. I think it's something we ought to change.
Okay, thank you.
Hicks. Yeah, briefly, in terms of Oregon's approach to court funding, I wonder if you could explain or delve briefly into, now, while the Oregon Judicial Department does pay for personnel, judges, clerks, etc., could you explain who pays for the rest of the judicial branch, that is to say, the courthouse, the facilities, the utilities, who pays for that? Do you know? I mean,
yes, Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, Representative Hicks. I think Kingsley Click can give you a more definitive answer, but my understanding is everything from the light sockets out belongs to the county, is provided by the county, and is funded by the county. The court operations, the actual functioning of the circuit courts, is paid for by the state.
Thank you. Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. I've passed out testimony to you today. You can see that the Lane County Board of County Commissioners has been following this issue through the interim with the Justice System Revenue Committee. We did provide testimony during the committee, and we are opposed to the bill moving forward. I outlined two specific concerns. One's related to law libraries. You've heard a lot about that. The other is related to mediation services that are provided, and I'd like to delve into that just in a moment. And then on the final paragraph, discuss the issue of sort of the dedicated funding stream versus an appropriated funding stream and the challenges that we think that will bring forward in terms of future revenues for the programs. In terms of the family mediation, I just wanted to outline to you how that local fee is set. The program that we run has had three fee increases in the past 23 years. And the procedure is that staff first bring their need for the fee increase to an advisory body. It's called the Lane County Mediation Program Mediation Commission. That has three circuit court judges on it, two local attorneys, and a local child psychologist. They review the request for the fee increase, and then they make a recommendation to the presiding judge, and that's Marianne Bearden. So in April of last year, she got a request for an increase in the local fee that she approved. That then goes to the Board of County Commissioners, and during one of their regularly scheduled meetings, they address that issue, and they did approve the fee increase. Point I'm trying to bring here is that there is a system in place for local oversight of these fee increases. They're just like in the legislative process, there's several opportunities for people to provide input. There's several opportunities for people to say no. But we feel that through the duly elected authority granted to not only the judges but the Board of County Commissioners, they've reviewed the need, and it is a local decision-making process that is able to act when it needs to act. It's not forced into, for example, what we fear in this process would be an appropriations process that can occur very quickly in Salem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Chair Beecher. I should say good afternoon, Co-Chair Baker, Co-Chair Krieger, and the committee. I represent the Multnomah Law Library right now. The board, the president of our board, intended to come, so I have his testimony or letter to you. Mine. And then also I'm bringing a letter from the Oregon Association of County Law Libraries. So I'm kind of wearing three hats right now. As I said, I'm the law librarian at the Multnomah Law Library. And believe it or not, I've been there since 1964. So I've gone through these hearings more or less off and on for a number of years. Our board is deeply concerned about the impact that HB 2010 and 2011 will have on not only our library, but all the add-on entities that are named in the bill.
We feel that the results of these
bills will destabilize the operations of the law libraries, the county law libraries, as well as the other entities. The decrease in the funding, which the bill definitely will bring about, will possibly eliminate the county law library services, and particularly those to the pro se people. As you've heard, legal aid can't service everyone. There would be a conflict of interest. And consequently, the
clerk's office down in the
second floor in the courthouse, and different attorneys will say, you know, go up to the law library,
they'll give you the form and they'll direct you to the sources you need. So we do serve a function that many people don't even realize is being served. We also feel that both the bills will add an unnecessary layer of government to our operation. Our budgets are already subject to county law library audits and budget process. So there's oversight that we haven't, we keep hearing is absent from our operations. Also, we're concerned the bill, as it stands right now, would provide, the fixed amount provides the $7.4 million, which is slightly under the funds that we received in 2007-2009. So historically, it is lesser than what we have been receiving. Also, the bill imposes a 5-8% collection management fee by the state court administrative office. And this means another decrease of 5-8% from that fixed fee. We have never had that charge prior to this. We really feel that this bill politicizes the whole process, the distribution process, and that will create competition not only between the county law libraries, but all the entities that are included in this fixed sum. The law library does not support the designation of AOC as our oversight and distribution agency. It's not the mission or function for AOC to create a county law library program. And they admit they don't really have the knowledge and background for a development of the proper guidelines and standards for the operation of a county law library. The library feels it's a nonprofit private corporation, and we've been designated as a quasi-public corporation by the Attorney General's office a number of years ago. And we really believe that if this bill goes through, that the Multnomah Law Library should replace the AOC. Again, as a whole, the board feels that they can only oppose the bill.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sankton. If you guys just stay where you are. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Representative Olson.
Paul, just really quick, of the four programs that are identified and where the county is taking care of those right now, I have heard from a couple of different sources that they believe that within 2 years, two of those, the legal aid services, the law library and the dispute resolution services will probably be diminished from the county level. Are you aware of that, or have you heard that conversation?
Mr. Co-Chair, no, Representative Olson, no, I have not. I'm not sure. I don't know about the details or the context, but it would be good to hear.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. You may be excused.
Well, thank
we'll go on to the next bill, and they're going to be testifying on that.
I have a comment from Ms. Jerkins.
Okay, thank you.
I may.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to extend a welcome and a thank you. As a young lawyer, I spent quite a bit of time in the law library there in the courthouse, and it's a wonderful service, and I thank you.
Thank you,
Representative Martin. Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm new to this, so forgive me. How are you funded now, the law libraries? How are they funded now? How are the law libraries funded now? Anyone either knows the answer, please tell me.
Okay. The law library, all county law libraries, are funded by a percentage of that's added on to the what we used to call the uniform filing fee. The county law libraries now receive 28% of the filing fee, and that's the uniform filing fee, and then that's added on to the total fee.
And may I? And then is that distributed?
That's distributed to the county, the official in the county that received the funds. It goes to the treasurer, the auditor,
okay,
and they distribute it to the county agency that's actually administering the library operation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, please.
Paul Snyder again. We'd be pleased to participate in a work group with regard to this bill if there is one created.
Okay, thank you. Okay, close the public hearing on House Bill 2710 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2711.
Yeah, yeah.
Shane, go ahead and give us a brief.
Measure House Bill 2711 creates Joint Committee on State Courts Revenue Structure to review all state court fines and fees biennially in consideration of enumerated principles that you'll find on page 1 from lines 10 through 25. It requires the committee to identify statutes and practices that are inconsistent with those principles. It requires a report in odd-numbered years within 180 days of signing die describing the nonconformities and making recommendations.
Mr. Co-Chair, Paul Snyder representing Association of Oregon Counties. Our position on 2711 is very similar to 2710, and for the same reasons. We just don't believe that uniformity and
Representative Barker, Representative Krieger, members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler, Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. You have my testimony. I'd echo what Mr. Snyder has just said. We have a couple of concerns about the principles that are established in the bill. And then finally, I just wanted to express that there's a little bit of a difference between the direction given to this proposed committee versus what was envisioned in the former committee that was envisioned under 2287 from 2009, and specifically that has to do with collections issues. We noted that the interim committee didn't spend a whole lot of time on the collections issue, yet there's an enormous amount of money both at the state and local court level that remains uncollected, and there are specific challenges there. We hope to address some of them this session. But it's a very important concern, and I think that unless it's directed to the committee to add that in their charge, that it again would go unaddressed. Thank you.
I think there's a justice court implication here that and the reason I asked previously about who funds, you know, that particular portion of the state court system is because I just want it to be part of the conversation that, I mean, if this is going to adversely affect, you know, county funding in some way or another in favor of the state, I mean, we need to recognize that the counties are providing an integral part of the state court system now. Is that, I mean, that's right, isn't it? I mean, you provide security, you provide the building.
We do.
Right, and so we can't have a state court system if the county has got no money, right? Is that accurate generally?
Co-Chair Representative Hicks, that's correct. And we also provide the justice courts, the whole justice court system, without any cost to the state whatsoever.
Yes, could I add, co-chairs and Representative Hicks, the additional place where we provide some additional money on top of the state's contribution is also in DA salaries.
Thank you. Representative Wisnant, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Snyder, the General Government Committee is looking at a bill to do away with certain county libraries, law libraries. How does this bill work with that?
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, Representative Wisnant, not very well. we'll probably be making an appearance on that bill as well.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you. Is there any further business to come before the committee today? Meeting adjourned.